Well, my subject today is tithing. Most of you don't need to be told what tithe means, 10%, or why we tithe, because it's a command from God. But we will review various parts of it, and it's easy to forget why we do what we do. Sometimes we grow up, we live, years go by, and you think, I think, because I know it, everybody else must know it. So, and that's not always the case. I hope those of you who were born into the Church of God, I hope you were taught about tithing. I hope you understand the command. I hope that you are raising your children and passing it on. And if you're older and your children are out, I hope you were able to teach your children about tithing. Unfortunately, sometimes we need to be reminded of these things. And I've told you before that I was born and raised into the Church of God. And I understood tithing from my earliest days. And I've been, again, around tithing for a long time. So here's the little backstory to why I'm giving this subject today. And the subject is not to teach you how to tithe, but to make you think about how you tithe. So, most of you know what I do for a living, but besides that, I'm a collector of wire. I recycle, and I'm also a dumpster diver, and I pull wire out of the trash. It's apart from the business, it has nothing really to do with the business, only my dumpster happens to be close, it sits on business property, so I end up recycling. I can't stand to see something that's valuable going into the trash, and so I pull it out. Nobody else seems to have any interest in it, and so I pull it out and I save it, and it sits there until I have enough of it that I think I can get my money out of it by taking it to a recycling place. And when I do that, they weigh it and convert it into dollars, and they hand me a stack of cash. So depending on how much I took in, which is usually as much as I wait as long as I can because it's, you got to pay for gas and all those kinds of things. So they hand me the money. And let's just, for the calculation and ease of talking, help you think about it, let's call it $1,000. They hand me $1,000 in hundreds, 50s, 20s, and it's a nice little chunk of change. And you're like, yes, this is great. Here's this money. I've worked hard for this. It is nice to have it out of my face, and this is great. Government's not involved in it. It's all mine. Or is it? It's not often these days that we get handed a stack of cash. I'll come back to the story in a minute, but growing up, I had very little cash. Money was tight. We were poor, but occasionally there would be a few dollars to tithe on, and I have recollection of tithing as a child, and you know, like you take the dollar and you break it into 10 dimes, and you give mom, here's my first tithe, here's my second tithe, and so it's something I'm used to. So when I was age 13, I started working for the neighbor. The neighbor owned a hog farm, and he had 100 head of nice hogs. And my job was to make them smell better. So he paid me 75 cents an hour, and if you do the math, 40 hours, 75 cents an hour, that's $30 a week. And that was big bucks at age 13. And I don't exactly remember, but I would have taken that money and I would have, again, tithed on it, and I would have given some 10% to my mother, probably. It's like, okay, here's the 10%, and would have kept 10% for second tithe. I don't remember what happened in the third tithe. And I know that my mother then would have put it in an envelope with her tithes and send it to P.O. Box 111, Pasadena, California, 91123. So if people who have been around a while would remember that. And I remembered the address quite easily, and my wife remembered the zip code. So at some point in my younger years, I would have opened a checking account. And I remember writing that check and seeing the bank balance. You know, you put in the $1,000 or whatever it is, you put it in the bank, you write that $1,000 in your checkbook, and then you say, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to tithe. And so you take 10%, and then you transfer 10% into savings for second tithe, and that's pretty much the way it was all through my single life. And when we got married, we think that I probably kept track of the checkbook up until we bought the business in Idaho. And at that point, it made more sense for her to start writing the checks. And that's the way it's been ever since. But I remember writing the entries into that checkbook, and it's not really a feeling of my heart sinking. It's just this little, it's not a bad thing. It's just like gulp, you know, it was 1,000 and now it's 800. And that little gulp, you still do the right thing. You still write the check. You still transfer the money. It's still, you do it anyway, but it's still the feeling. You never get over that feeling of realizing that money is no longer yours. You've taken it out of your checking account and out of your easy grasp. So, what did I say? So roughly 1991, 1992, my wife probably started doing the books, both personally and in the business. And honestly, I haven't had to write those checks since 1992-ish. I haven't tithed since 1992. Don't laugh. You got to think about that. We tithe, but I don't tithe. That doesn't feel right. There's this feeling of letting money go, of taking that $1,000 and peeling off 100 or 200 and putting it aside. That feeling hurt when I was a little kid. You know, when you're dealing with a dollar, it's more fun to play with 10 dimes than it is a $1 bill. And here's the, some of you have children, and some of you who were children know how this goes. Some of you are around children. If a child has a toy that they really like, and you say to them, give me your toy, give it that to me, whatever it is that they, at that moment, and the kids do this, they get their new favorite, whatever it is, and you say, give it to me, and the lip comes out, and the tears might come out, and their little hand goes, tunk. And I'm telling you, I have that feeling when I have the $1,000 in my hand, and I know the right thing to do. I know I'm going to tithe on it, but there's still this, oh no. And that's okay. I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm an adult, and after all these years, every time I sell wire and have that experience, I'm reminded of it. And this time, I just can't let it go. I just keep thinking about it. It's different when I have to hand over the 10%. So I need to go through the rush, that little jab in my stomach, realizing that that little pile of money, honestly, it's really not mine at all. That God has given us everything we have, and that it is a privilege to be able to know that God is in control, that it is God's given me whatever it is, that he's allowed that money to come into my possession, and I shouldn't have to have a rush of twinge of pain to go through this experience. So this is what started this sermon. I realized I hadn't tithed. But yet, we tithe all the time. She writes the checks, and if I'm lucky, or if she's lucky, I'll put them in the mailbox. Now, hold that thought. Many people today don't even know what a checkbook is. Many people live off of digital money, and they swipe it on their screen of their cell phone or on their computer. So you can manually tithe on a digital device with a few swipes and a few clicks, however yours works, or you can set up for your convenience a bill pay or bill pay style service that you tell somebody, or you set it up in your computer so that it just happens and you don't have to actually get your pen and checkbook out. You can tell bill pay, who, however you want to figure, whatever that is, whatever bank, whatever app they have to do that, you can tell them to whatever I deposit, so the employer can direct deposit your money, and you can tell them ahead of time, I want 10% of it to go here, 10% to be transferred into savings, and so on and so on. And you're done. You basically don't have to think about it again. That's interesting. It sets you up to not have to think about God or your tithe ever again, as long as you have that app. That's interesting. The money goes where it needs, and God has the same priority as your house payment, your car payment, and your Netflix. That's interesting. It leaves out the opportunity for the puckered lip and the tight hand. And more importantly, it leaves out the opportunity for learning the great lesson in tithing. So before we go too far, I want to make it abundantly clear that I am not against online banking or bill pay. I'm not for it, and I'm not against it. I'm just simply trying to help us see that there is a potential shortcoming in this system that man has set up that is so helpful, and yet it takes us away from God. It helps you forget about God. Now, maybe you have this solved. Maybe you've thought about this and you have a solution. And if you do, let's talk about it, because I think other people might like to hear it also. I believe you all know you tithe to support God's work. There's a history of tithing in the Bible, from Abraham tithing to Melchizedek, all the way through the Levitical priesthood, into Nehemiah, and into the New Testament. Talked about in Malachi. Jesus Christ talked about it. Paul talked about it. Hebrews bookends with Melchizedek again in Hebrews. So there's no doubt that tithing is in the Bible and that we're supposed to do it. But the lesson of actually walking through it is something that we should never forget. So my title today is, Do You Tithe or Do You Honor God or Both? Because you can tithe without honoring God. And we need to do both. So do you tithe, or does your husband tithe, or your wife tithe? Is tithing about moving money from your personal account into the church's account, Let's turn to Proverbs 3 and verse 9. I don't know. I haven't ever figured out exactly where to start this subject because it's kind of personal or something. Proverbs 3 and verse 9 says, "Honor the Lord with your possessions." Now, it does not say there in that verse to tithe, but it does say, "Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine." The New Living adds a couple little things to it. It says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce." And so in Deuteronomy, we're taught to tithe on our increase. So our possessions, our increase. And I'm not trying to give you the minutia of how to tithe today. That's easy to do. You can not only you can go through the Bible and figure it out, but there are abundant references on UCG.org under tithing. There's study papers. There's case studies where some people have complicated lives and complicated financial circumstances. There are countries where the government takes more than they leave, and you'd be paying them if you tithe off of net, you wouldn't have anything left. And God's intention is not to make you go broke. It's a matter of honoring Him. So first comes honor. Again, Proverbs 3:9, honor the Lord with your possession. So honoring God is high on the priority list. It's first. It's first tithe. It's first honor to God. So Dale could probably understand this, but in Leviticus 27:32, we don't need to go there. I'm not going to spend any time there. But they would send the sheep under the rod and be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 gods. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 gods. And that's the way things were done back then. So now, say that farmer was there and he could see, it's like, here's the little flock that's God's and here's the flock that's, you could say, mine. So, but seeing the cash, seeing the sheep actually going somewhere, seeing that stack of cash is something that maybe in the older time, last century, that was more common. And when we have these digital screens, it's not so common. It's a different feeling. It's just a swipe and like, yes, you can see your balance and all that, but it's not quite the same. So I'd like to think that, of course, I'm going to tithe and do the right thing, no matter whether it's on the screen or it's the sheep passing under the rod or whether it's a stack of greenbacks. But what is my attitude in the process is what I'm trying to get across. So what is my attitude in the process? So if I'm not in the process, if my wife is the one that's tithing, then I am not in the process. And so that's the problem. God loves a cheerful giver, 2 Corinthians 9:6, but that's a tithing is a command. It's not an offering. This God says give a tenth, give a tithe. That's what we're supposed to do. And then we have to, the offerings are a different story, but the heart plays a part in both. And do we do it willingly? Do we do it grudgingly? Do we skirt the rules? Who am I trying to fool? Do you think God can't see what's going on in your head or in your heart? Do you think He can see the blip on the radar when you go, oh no, I have to give some to God? Rats. That's not what we want to have happen. And so when that happens, you have to quickly manage your thoughts and realize that you're still going to do the right thing and realize that it's a blessing to be able to keep the 80%. or the 90%, depending on how you want to view it, because the second tithe is something we get to spend on ourselves. So God watches what our regular income is. You don't have to fool God. You don't have to try to stack the books or anything. God can see what you're doing. The church isn't watching. The church doesn't come audit you. The pastor doesn't come audit you. The bookkeeper doesn't audit you. Nobody's going to get into your checkbook or your screen and figure that out. But God also just as easily can monitor your moonlighting income. He easily monitors my wire income. And or if you mow grass, whatever that income is, whatever that increase is, we are to honor him with our substance, no matter where it came from, whatever that increase is. And again, you have to work that out between you and God. So I'm recognizing that this is a two-part process. It's not about just the bank transfer of money. It's about the spiritual component. So you have the physical component of the bank transfer, and you have a spiritual component of, are you getting anything out of this, or are you just supporting the church? So if you tithe and you're actually sending money in, don't begrudge it, or you're forgetting whose it is. So turn to Matthew 23:23. This is if you want to remember a verse, this is an easy verse to remember, that because this is where Jesus Christ sets it up and nails it down. Matthew 23:23. Matthew 23:23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. So he's in the middle of telling them the things they already, things they don't want to hear, but this is a chapter of woes. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These ought you to have done without leaving the others undone. So Christ is not saying that it's only about the tithe dollars, and he's not saying it's only about justice, mercy, and faith. It's all. It's both things. We need to do the physical things, and we need to have the spiritual things in line also. They aren't slammed for neglecting the weightier matters of the law, and he didn't say the priority is tithing. He said you do both. In our tithing, we have to check, we have to think about what we are doing. Are we displeasing to him, and is it possible that we're sending dirty money to the church? That is something that we have to think about. And God knows where that money came from, and you do too. Luke chapter 18. Sometimes we have to be careful that we don't pick on people of Christ's day, because sometimes when you point at somebody else, there's a few fingers pointing back at yourself. So Luke 18 and verse 9 says, also he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous. So, you know, it's like when you think that you've got it all figured out, you better look around, because you probably missed something. So they trusted him that they were righteous and despised others. Two men, verse 10, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men. Sounds dangerous. Extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. Verse 12, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all I possess. Oh boy, so what? And so Jesus Christ is slamming them, saying, woe to you, with this attitude. So you've got this tithe part all figured out. You can, you know, take the finest grains and count out the seeds and you know, not one for God and nine for you. You got that all figured out, but you're just missing out on the big stuff. So God owns it all. And getting your money is not God's priority. God owns it all. If he wanted mountains of money, he could make mountains of money. But why would he do that? It's already there. So what? If you don't have the other things figured out. Hang on 1 second. My phone is talking to me. Unbelievable. Must be Dale calling again. So the giver of the money is not supposed to be self-righteous in the actions. And you don't get a badge for doing what you're expected to do. You don't get a badge because you tithe. God isn't desperate for money. So even though I know what is happening with our personal checkbook, and I know that we are tithing, the personal element has been missing. So I have to decide, have I forgotten God because I'm not writing those checks? Have I forgotten or not remembered? There's a difference in there. Not much of a difference, but we have to be careful that we remember, and we have to be careful that we don't forget. Have I failed to count our blessings? And while I was thinking about this, I went and listened to several people sing, "Count Your Blessings, Name Them One by One." I found that interesting. I thought about whether we could do that in church here, but I decided we probably shouldn't. Each of us has to give thanks and be mindful of God in our individual lives. It's not about God having the relationship with the check writer. It's about each of us individually having the relationship with God. And then we teach our children that it's not just about handing over the money, it's about whose money this is. So it's a two-step process. I get comfortable with how things are done, and I actually forget about tithing. I in some ways, I'm not even aware that it's payday. I'm not aware of, like, I'm doing other stuff, and it just happens, and that's what's going to happen. That's my impression of what would happen on bill pay. So, of course we tithe. The work needs to have money, but I need to have a relationship with God as well. Deuteronomy 14:22. Deuteronomy 14:22. Gently referred to this earlier. Now this passage is used a lot at the Feast of Tabernacles because much of the passage involves more of the second tithe aspect of things. But Deuteronomy 14:22 says, "You shall tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year." And I want to drop down to verse 24. Again, we are talking about the second tithe. "But if the journey is too long for you so that you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far for you, when the Lord your God has blessed you," So when we do our part, that gives God the opportunity to bless us. You know, God can make it rain anywhere he wants to, but rain coming on you is not a symbol that you're righteous. God causes it to rain on the just and the unjust. But God can bless you in many ways that you don't even necessarily think about. And just the fact that you have a relationship, that you, or even it's on your mind, can be that God is blessing you and giving, opened your mind to this truth. Dropping down to verse 29, and the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates. So we're talking about third tithe now, that they may come in and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work which of your hand which you do. So we desire God's blessing, and in that process we need to be thinking about the tithe that we are giving to him. We don't have to turn there. Mark 12 and verse 13, actually verse 17, Christ said when they brought the they were trying to trick Christ up and cause him to say something that would embarrass him, and they wanted to know should we tithe or should we give tribute to Caesar. And Christ said in Mark 12, verse 17, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. So we are supposed to pay taxes, and we are supposed to take care of the things that allow us. You know, we live in a country that's free, that the ambulances run around, and that we have services and all. We are supposed to contribute to those, but at the same time, we are to give to God what is rightfully his. I've many times, it's remarkable how many times people will write into the Dear Abbeys and various questions, people who answer questions, and they say that they've given somebody a gift and the person has not sent them a thank you note. And they, like, could be an expensive gift and there's no recognition that anything's happened. It's like, did they get it? Didn't they get it? Or I know they got it and they didn't say anything. And so, here we are talking about tithing, and God allows the blessings to come in. And if we're not reciprocating and sending the thank you note, figuratively, then it kind of hardens the heart of the giver. And that's what I see in some of these answers and when people present these things, that you're like, I've given them this wonderful thing and they didn't say boo. It makes me not want to do it next time, whether it be a birthday gift or an anniversary gift or whatever. It kind of stains the soul on giving. And so whether it be, this is off the point, but when something's given to us, we need to remember that and be thankful for it. So God has given us so much, and we need to be thankful for it. And we need to express that back to God. So going back to my first scripture and honoring God with all your substance, or honor God with your substance, I keep thinking, what am I trying to say in this? And so you're tithing off your substance, but the first word in that verse was honor. Honor the Lord. And so let's talk a little bit about honoring the Lord with your substance. We're told to honor our parents. We're told to honor the elderly. We're told to honor those who have the rule over you. We're told to honor all men, honor the king. But we're repeatedly told to honor God, that God is worthy of honor. And we know that. That's head knowledge. Okay, of course God needs to be honored. No, it's not. It needs to be heart. It needs to be something we actually do. So how do you honor God? And I won't go into this exhaustively, but you can honor God with your time. If you never have time for God, then who do you have time for? There are only like two major categories of beings in the universe. It's like God, and then there's Satan. So are you more tied up in the things of God or more tied up in the things of the world? So we can honor God with our time, with our talents. There are people that actually have been suppressed recently because they can't sing and they can't play, making beautiful music. But there are many talents that people have. And when they can't get together, it cramps their style. People have leadership skills, so you have talents. We're told to honor God with our bodies, that we're the temple of the Holy Spirit. We got to make sure that we're doing things that are pleasing to God in that way. We're told to honor God with our treasures, so our money, the things that are important to us, and with our heart. We're told to honor God with our heart. Revelation 4 and verse 9, Revelation 4 and verse 9, I think most of us, if we said, are you supposed to honor God? You say, oh, sure, we're supposed to honor God. Of course, that. Why wouldn't you? Revelation 4 and verse 9, says, whenever the living creatures give glory and honor and thanks to him who sits on the throne, who lives forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before him who sits on the throne and worship him who lives forever and ever and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, you are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they exist and were created. So you notice that this honor, a lot of it is coming off of their lips, and it's what they say. It's, you are worthy, O Lord, to receive honor and glory and power. It's in our actions that we take on those things, and it's what we say. And I think this is largely said in prayer for us, but here in heaven, it's actually happening in real time. And, you know, can you imagine this happening? It must just happen. This must be normal. This is, God doesn't change, so this is normal. It's an amazing thing. Honor in, I went through some of the Bible helps. Honor is the honor of one who outranks others, like preeminence. So honor is esteem, used in ascriptions to worship to God. It's to highly respect or reverence or exalt. And so you treat God unlike you treat your next door neighbor or your workmates or something. God is so much greater than anybody here that we need to make sure that we're giving him, similar to what's being described here, we need to make sure we're giving him honor and praise and high esteem. And we do that through our words, through our prayers. So, when we, part of the, I think the little feeling you get when you take that 20% off the top is that you realize and you know that you're going to live on 20% less than everybody else, whatever the people, you know, in your work group are making. You know, everybody kind of knows what everybody makes, so whatever they make, you just kind of know that you're going to have to exist on 20% less than that. Isn't that a carnal way to look at it? Your 80% when you obey God is going to stretch as far and further than their 100%. You'll get more out of the 80% than they get out of the 100%. And you do that because God will bless you, because he's told you to do this thing, and he says, I'm going to bless you, and you do it, and through obedience, he will make it happen. Now, we don't have to go there, but you can think of stories like Elijah and the widow. And she had just enough meal and food. Because he asked her, can I, you know, make me some food so I can come eat with you? And she said, well, I'm just getting ready to make my last meal so my son and I can eat it before we die. That sounds pretty fatalistic, but that's all she had. There was no more, and she knew there was no more. And because of God's blessing and God's intervention, she was able to go on for quite some time with Elijah's living there. Mr. Moody talked last week about the one day of oil lasted 8 days. So we have to be careful of poking out that lip and clenching our hand, and because God has ways of making these things last. You know, your shoes don't have to wear out. Israelites, you know, 40 years in the same flip-flops wouldn't have been too much fun, but that's the way it was. There was no shoe store close by. So why am I talking about tithing? Am I insinuating people are not tithing, or that you're not tithing correctly? No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that tithing is more than just sending money to the church, and is more than just making an adjustment in our bank account. Tithing, first tithe, is a reminder that everything in life that we see and touch and feel and everything we can see is God's. It's so much greater than what's here. It's just unimaginable that God controls it all, that God allows us to wake up every morning, that God causes photosynthesis to take place, that the water just keeps going back up in the sky and falling back out of it again. It's like we have so much to be thankful for, and we do need to count our blessings, and we need to be obedient so that God can bless us. And the second tithe reminds us that there's far more to God's plan than just what we're seeing, that he has holy days that represent what he's trying to do here on this earth. And it's a blessing to be able to understand that and to rejoice before him. And when we pay third tithe, we are realizing that many people are less fortunate than we are. They have problems that they cannot overcome on their own. And many of them are trapped into society. They're widows, they're strangers, they're fatherless, and they do not have the power to control their day and their destiny. And so the little bit of tithe and money that we can produce from that is wonderful to be able to bless other people with. Just a blurb out of, not a blurb, a sentence out of the Fundamental of Beliefs booklet that's published by the United Church of God on page 55 under the tithing section. It says that the motivation to tithe is a worshipful recognition of God as the creator and possessor of the entire universe and everything in it, including ourselves. So we wouldn't be having this conversation if God wasn't doing what he is doing. So it all belongs to God, and we don't have to worry about whether the sky is going to fall overnight. And we are not to forget God. So do I need to start writing the tithe check? Well, then I'd be depriving my wife of that opportunity. I don't see the answer as who writes the tithe check. I think about what we need to do individually to give praise and thanks to God. And writing the tithe check is a physical reminder of how blessed we are. It's a privilege to know God and his son, Jesus Christ. It's a privilege to know why we're here on this earth and to understand what the future holds for us. And it's nice to have a reminder to step back and think about, look at the forest for a minute, not just whatever's in front of our face and whatever's causing us to be busy on this particular day. God's bringing many sons to glory, and we need to be doing our part to be converted. We need to make sure that we're not in the way of doing what God's trying to do, because we are different. We're not like our neighbors. We have different goals and ambitions than our neighbors, and we just need to be reminded of that. I need to be reminded of that. And if it's on a paycheck by paycheck, that's not often enough, but it's better than my history and my track record over the last 30 years. God has countless ways to help us make ends meet. And it's not about how much we earn on the job. It's about, yes, it's about how we budget our money, but it's largely about how God blesses us and makes ends meet when in ways that we're not, but that we really can't outguess God. So turn to 1 Chronicles 29. So am I cognizant of what God is doing in my life? The blessings that he's pouring out, the interventions through his angelic realm, that how many times has he saved me from myself? Do I recognize and thank him for who he is and what he's doing in me and those and others around me? And if I did that, I would gladly send him the 10% because the payback is awesome. So I need to let go of my fist. I need to change my, train the glitch inside of my body that says, oh no, I'm going to miss this money. It's like, I'm going through this and I have a roof over my head and I'm not hungry. I've got so much to be thankful for that I should be more than willing. I'm, 10%, that's what's commanded. It's like, what about the tithes and what about the offerings? What more can I do? God is financially secure. He doesn't need our money. 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 10. I think this is the best example I could find of somebody expressing to God of how one should feel. Whether I pray this exact prayer or use this as an outline, I don't know, but I'm working on it. We're trying to figure out what's the right answer. Do we have some kind of a notification when she writes the check? Does she tell me, hey, I'm writing a check? Maybe when I take it to the mailbox, maybe I should know that I'm taking a tithe check But I've got to figure it out, right? I'm telling you this, and now I have to figure it out. So you can ask me, how did you figure this out? What are you going to do? So if you do digital money, are they going to send you an email or a text? How can you know that, how can you be reminded that you're tithing? You have to figure that out. And then how do we apply Old Testament and New Testament policy in the year 2021, which is just a couple weeks away? So we have to think about it. We have to be mindful of what God is trying to do in us. 1 Chronicles 29:10. Therefore, David blessed the Lord before all the assembly. And this is a wonderful read. If you go back before this, and this is kind of towards the end of his life, and Solomon's being set up as the new king. And David is pouring out, is expressing, his life, kind of wrapping it up in a final prayer here. He's talking to the assembly, but it comes across like a prayer. Therefore, David blessed the Lord before all the assembly, and David said, "Blessed are you, Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power, and the glory. The victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you reign over all. In your hand is power and might, and in your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. Now, therefore, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. But who am I, and who are my people, that we should be able to offer so willingly as this. For all things come from you, and all of your own we have given you. For we are aliens and pilgrims before you, as were all our fathers. Our days on earth are as a shadow and without hope. O Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have prepared to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand and is all your own. I know also, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness. As for me, in the uprightness of my heart, I have willingly offered all these things. And now with joy I have seen your people who are present here to offer willingly to you. O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, our fathers, keep this forever in the intent of the thoughts of our heart of your people, and fix their heart toward you. And give my son Solomon a loyal heart to keep your commandments and your testimonies and your statutes, to do all these things and to build the temple for which I have made provision. And David said to all the assembly, now bless the Lord your God. So all the assembly blessed the Lord of their fathers and bowed their heads and prostrated themselves before the Lord and the king. That is a wonderful piece of literature and a prayer that is so meaningful. I'm sure that he had tears in his eyes, and the people should have also. So I don't want all the online banking people to walk out of church today thinking they have to now go change how they bank. I do suggest that you do some serious thinking about how you can make sure you not only tithe, but honor God in the process. And just as tithing is a personal activity between you and God, you don't have to ask permission for what you do. God is testing your heart and mine. So my question again is, do you tithe, or do you honor God, or both?